Thank you, sir. I'd like really to thank you for the opportunity to speak in this important scientific forum. By the way, it gives me also another personal excitement because for me it's coming back to my roots. My family come from Hungary. My mother was born here. So it's another opportunity to be exposed again to the roots of the family, to listen to the language. So I'll shift to English. Well, Israel is a state which is very poor in natural resources. I'm saying very poor, if at all. Okay, there's no oil. There are now some gas findings, but it will take quite some time before we can extract the gas from those findings. Also very poor in water. Water management is a major problem in Israel. And we also have some other problems not to mention here. Nevertheless, Israel has managed to become a universal scientific and technological power. And the reason indeed is not the human resource and not financial resources. Not natural resources and not financial resources, but rather the human resource. And the human resource exists everywhere. And the potential exists everywhere. But this, in fact, puts us facing a challenge. Now, the challenge is not realizing the potential of the human resource in, say, so-called strong places, strong cities, cities in which there are very strong universities, research institutes, colleges, but rather in the periphery, where people are less exposed to science, to learning. And when I say periphery, I don't mean only geographical periphery, namely places which are geographically remote from research institutes, but also demographic periphery, because the Israeli society is quite diverse and it consists of many sectors, and some of them are far less exposed to sciences. So this is a problem that we face in Israel, and actually it's a lower scale. I mean, our local problem is just a lower scale of the universal problem of countries, you know, strong countries with a very strong tradition and exposure to science, and other countries which are very much behind. And the question is how we overcome it. So let me share with you the Israeli way, very original way, that started some 30 years ago in handling this problem. And in recent years, we have accelerated the program that was proven to be very successful. Now, what do we do? Well, maybe let's start with what we don't do. I remember that a few months ago, I participated in a meeting of science ministers of the European Union, which was held in Poland, in Sopot, Poland, where they tried to discuss the policy of the next Horizon 2020 program of the European Union, which is going to replace the seventh framework program. There is a temptation. You know, this program is going to be very rich in money. There is a temptation to think that the way to solve problem is by money. What do you mean by money? Establish a university, a research institute, in a place which is, say, remote from research. Put a lot of money. You can offer, you know, very impressive salaries to scientists, and that's how to bring science to that place. Well, those who know how scientists think, how scientists work, know that it won't work. I'm a professor of mathematics at the Technion, Israel Institute of Technology. I'm very proud to say this today. The Technion has three homemade Nobel Prize laureates within 7 years. There are not too many such institutes in the world. And not too many people that can say that three very close friends of them got the Nobel Prize, okay? Well, it's quite clear to me that if someone started or tried to establish another university or another institute in the periphery, thinking that by offering good salaries, you can really attract the good scientist, that person don't understand that scientists, well, of course, you know, money matters, but the first thing that matters is the reputation of the place, is the human infrastructure. I mean, what are the scientists, whom do you work with? For such a place, there's no chance to compete whatsoever with the Technion. When I was the dean of the Faculty of Mathematics at the Technion, and I made an offer to a young mathematician whom I wanted to hire for the Technion, if that person got an offer from the School for Advanced Studies in Princeton University, I knew that my chances to beat that offer were very slim, if at all. And it was not the question of money, but the question is of reputation, of what are the chances of a young scientist to develop there in such an institute against his chances to develop in a place which is, well, very good, but compared to the other one, is second or third rate. So the way to attract or to develop scientific research, scientific institute in a place located in the periphery, and to start something from the beginning, is to use the strength of that area, of that zone. And the strength of that zone is the zone itself. Each zone usually has special characteristics. Now, those special characteristics can be geological, can be biological, can be the special vegetation, can be the special archaeology of that place. The whole idea is to try to focus at the characteristics of that area, at those characteristics that can best study there, and sometimes they can only be studied there. And our concept was to form, to establish, we call it regional R&D centers with certain rules. And the rules were, first of all, those centers have to study the characteristics of the zone. Then they have to be remote enough from, established universities, but all the researchers have to be affiliated with well-established universities or research centers, but they have to reside in the area. And finally, the research has to be of level which is good enough to win competitive funds. Then we started with a very low scale of 3 to 10 scientists in each such center. But the success has been unbelievable. The whole area was changed. If I refer to maybe to the biggest success, which is in the north of Israel, Kiryat Shmona, an area which was very much neglected, was also quite exposed to attacks during the wars. There was nothing scientific there. We started with such a original center with, I think, 4 or 5 scientists. Now, they developed so well, without any significant governmental assistance. Nowadays, they employ 200 scientists of very high level research, and one of the leading labs in the world in genetics. So the same happens in the near the Dead Sea, near the south of Israel, and also in the demographic periphery. We have established 3 such centers in the Arab sector. One of them, which I'm very proud of, is located in Shfaram, in the Galilee. And again, the scientists, all Arabs, they made, or they found, had some wonderful findings, and they made so well that when we helped them to increase our support, they suggested that we shift our support, we give it towards other institutes, because they were already on their own and they've built their own center. So this has proven to be a very successful concept, and I think that what can be done locally can be done universally. Actually, the governments of Israel and Germany have decided to cooperate in helping other countries employing this concept, and in fact, we are already planning doing it together with UNESCO. So here is an example that local solution can lead to a universal solution. And finally, let me conclude, there's another fringe benefit. You know, those regional centers can also cross borders. And actually, some of the cooperations we have are with Jordan. We have cooperation on agriculture, R&D, as well as the Sesame Project, which is located in Jordan. It's a project of synchrotron, it's particle acceleration, Middle Eastern particle acceleration, in which, believe it or not, the partnering countries are Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Cyprus, Kuwait, and Iran, which means that science really needs no politics. Politics doesn't help there. Thank you very much.